Loud Ass Chris, DJ Them Jeans. What's really good?
Is that Loud Ass Chris? Oh, you know, just some December gloom. The last moments of gloom happening. How are you feeling?
I mean, the weather's been tragique, but it seems to be it's sunny over here.
Yeah, I'm just today's the 22nd, but you're going to be hearing this next week after Christmas, taking a day off. Sorry about that, guys, but you know, I needed to unplug from my Ableton. Self-care Saturdays. I mean, you should be hanging out.
Yeah.
Going hiking with your loved ones on Christmas anyway, right? You shouldn't be hiking alone.
I mean, I guess I would maybe hike alone. I mean, luckily, I did check today. Equinox is opened on Christmas Day, so I have plans.
I know. I saw that, and I was like, Christmas Day. I was a little upset that I wasn't going to be able to see what it looked like.
I bet it's going to be
at 9 a.m.
9 a.m. won't be busy, but I bet like 11 a.m. will be.
The 11 to 2 stretch is
Christmas doesn't matter.
High octane.
It doesn't matter anymore. Like when I was a kid, everything shut. You know, it was like everything shut down. It was like the fucking you couldn't do anything. You know, the grocery store was closed. Everything.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can kind of go about your day. If you know, things close a little early, but you can hit the coffee shop. There's some restaurants that are open.
Is that good or bad? Is that better or worse? Or is better. Indifferent on it?
No, it's better. It means okay. it means that Christmas means less, which is what
it means
what I'm going for. That's what I'm pushing for.
It means that you haven't won the war against Christmas, but this is a battle.
Yes.
For Team Black.
This is a W for Team Black. So, I mean, I don't know how much further it's going to go, you know, but I would love for like a full, it's a normal day,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe you have breakfast with your family if you have to, but then the day continues on.
Okay.
We all get back to work. We're on the laptop. No more slams laptop shut till 2024 memes. It could be good. It could be good for us as a society, I think.
Okay.
So you're going to unplug from Ableton, but you're not actually unplugging when you're in Cabo.
Well, you mean like from Twitter?
I just mean like when people say they're going to unplug, I think there's obviously varying degrees of that.
Of course.
And I think most people are full of shit.
It begs the question for me, at least, was I ever plugged in to begin with?
I mean,
do I have a plug to unplug from, right?
But what does it mean to you? What does unplug mean to you? Because I think some people means they, you know, delete Instagram from their phone for a day and then they lose their mind, have to re-download it.
Oh.
I don't know what I mean?
No.
Like, what is your vibe?
No, I'm way too afraid of what'll happen if I ever deleted social media from my phone. That's cuckoo.
Okay.
But I think for me, it might not surprise you that I don't have a plan for unplugging.
Okay, good. Thank God.
And I'm just hoping that it'll magically happen and work out.
This is why we do this. I mean, you're gonna be forced.
I think honestly, if I had to answer this question, gun to my head, it might mean I will try to not look at my screens as much as possible,
mm-hmm.
the least amount of screen time as possible. And usually that means, you know, just reading a bunch, just mm-hmm. disassociating with a good novel.
Well, you need to disassociate from your American Express app. You got to turn those noties off while you're at the Nobu, just so you don't.
Okay. See, okay. That's a good tip.
You don't need to know. You know what I mean? You don't need to know how many $10 lattes are hitting the account. Mm-hmm. It's better. Ignorance is bliss. That's how Santa would want it, I think.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I've made peace with it. There's no point in doing it if you're not going to do it. And I know I will have a fun time and I will be relaxing. And I do look forward to, you know, getting some reading done and just, you know, reflecting.
Hey, dude, hey, look, bro, it's cool. Carolyn's not listening to this. You don't have to do this.
But I mean, what else am I going to do?
No, I know. I'm kidding. No.
Catch up on emails?
That's what I would love to be catching up on emails. No, that makes that you have the right attitude. Mm. You often have the right attitude. That's one of your best qualities, actually.
Oh, there we go.
I mean, it's a different time of year. You know, we had to drive last night. It was a nice 50-minute drive over to Eagle Rock.
Mm-hmm.
For a dinner party that was, I had a great time, but I was like, wow, the holidays really suck the fun out of. But I got an update for you. So my car came with Sirius XM subscription.
Mm-hmm.
I had never really, I mean, I'd used SiriusXM before to listen to like Howard Stern or something, but we were listening to it last night and it rocks. It's awesome.
Okay.
And it's like fun.
Are you listening to Andy's? What's Andy's radio station called? Radio Andy?
Radio Andy. No, I was listening to John. We listened to John Mayer's a little bit. Mm-hmm. But then there's several hip hop stations of varying degrees. They're kind of like, you want new shit, we got it. You want the shit when you were on coke in the club, we got that too. You want the shit when you were middle school, we mm-hmm. got that.
You want old school? Do you want gold school? I recently learned about gold school.
Yeah, yeah, gold school. Yeah, Rock the Bells is not on my playlist, but
gold school means it was old school when it was good for me.
Oh, I thought
which that. I think that just means 50 Cent.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Which is 50 Cent old school now? I guess he is.
He is, yeah.
Damn, that's rough.
You know, 20 years old.
Yeah, that's true.
But that record came out.
But SiriusXM, I liked it so much, I'm afraid I'm going to have to continue and pay for the subscription when the free one runs out. I really liked it. It was nice to get in the car and just listen to music and not mm-hmm. have to think about it and open my apps and like get scroll.
So you finally understand.
What, NTS?
Because you understand the benefit of SiriusXM radio. It could have something to do with decision fatigue, and you get in your car and I have to pick something, and is my wife gonna like this, is my friend gonna like this, is Chris gonna judge me, I'm just gonna listen to classical
when
or
you put
like
on
that.
Bruce Springsteen, the E Street Band radio, you know what I mean? You can't really miss that. That's the other thing, they only have boomer stations.
That's where you're wrong, Josh.
There's Pearl Jam, there's the Grateful Dead, there's Bruce Springsteen. I'm like, damn, this is the most boomer ass stations you could possibly have. But that's who subscribes.
I listen to a little outlaw country.
John Mayer was playing some Johnny Paycheck on his station last night. So it was unfortunately it was followed by Ed Sheeran.
Try that in a big town.
But you can't win everything. But yeah, I think I'm serious pilled and made the drive a little more fun.
Okay, beautiful. Maybe one day we'll become serious creators.
Yeah, I would love to have the How Long Gone Serious radio station where we just program music like Andy, but it's good music instead of just Madonna and the Grateful Dead. There could be a market for that.
I mean, we'll have so many episodes. We'll have such a large, deep archive like Friends or Frasier. We'll be able to go How Long Gone in syndication on Sirius.
Did you see that headline about Matthew Perry and his OD on ketamine is like affecting the ketamine community? It was like I was like, yeah,
ketamine's the one drug where an overdose affects it negatively. Fentanyl's like, yeah, shit happens, bro, but ketamine, everyone's like, okay, this is bad, we need to do something about
it. Like I was like, yeah, what do you mean, what, like that's bad? Yeah, of course it's bad. I was so confused by the whole thing, the way it was worded.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's one of those things where I guess people are upset to learn that a party drug that turns you into a brainless zombie could have negative side effects. Maybe drug that most people are too afraid to do because a common side effect is entering a K-hole where you're unable to think, speak, or breathe.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean death. You know, that's the thing. Death.
True.
Death is when it gets too far. A K-hole is over at some point. Death is forever, Jason. You know that. Merry Christmas, everybody. Death is
damn,
forever.
Preach.
Death is forever.
I might be in a bad mood because I watched Trevor Noah's special on Netflix last night.
Oh, my God, dude. We watched it, too. It is atrocious. Him doing the German accent. Like, the German accent's one. It's worse than my British accent. It's unbelievable.
There's a lot of German stuff in there. He loves German stuff. He loves... It's weird because I think I watched it to try and study him, and because Carolyn was like, why the hell is he so, like,
he's huge,
playing on this huge stage, he's so big, he's so popular, and she's like, what? I just want to watch it just to see what the deal is. And we were both just like, fucking shit, bro. Like,
I mean, he literally quit doing a TV show because he can make more money doing stand-up.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
You know, like that's it's so crazy. He's so bad. It's shocking how bad
it is. I think I was trying to look into the crowd, and it's a lot of kind of older people, like NPR.
Yeah, for sure.
Which is fine. Not necessarily the funniest bunch, but I think the material was really speaking to kind of – I don't know. It's an interesting thing because you hear about comedians, like the biggest ones are the ones who are kind of the dumbest, lowest common denominator, you know, the Theo Vonses and the whatevers, hillbilly, blue collar comedy, all that shit. Trevor Noah is sort of thought of as a smart, intellectual, well-read person, so he doesn't get lumped into that category. But the majority of his material is sort of scholastic in nature, but it's focusing on like the sixth grade level history.
Well, what
it's all about, like the national anthem and like,
yeah,
you know, just like stuff that you learn about in like textbooks in middle school.
What it's not focusing on is humor. That's the problem, is there's not a single joke in the whole thing. There's not even, I didn't even crack a smile. Like it's unbelievable.
I didn't know that he was so, he was so kind of reliant on doing racial accents, like white guy, black guy, Irish guy, German guy.
I didn't know that either.
Asian guy. Like that's like half of his whole, the meat of his act is just doing different voices.
It's really, don't watch it.
To me, it seemed like it must tickle you to watch it as maybe a youngster.
I don't know.
Like nerdy 12-year-olds might be like gagging over this.
I don't
know.
I don't think that's who it's for. I think it's who exactly you think it is. Like 44-year-old liberal, like live in a city and think they're a little smarter than everyone else. Like that's who watches The Daily Show. Like that's exactly who watches The Daily Show. Like people who are blue as hell and think they're a little smarter than everyone else. That's exactly who the audience is.
But shouldn't,
you know?
But that's what I thought. But I'm dubious because the subject matter to me feels so elementary that if I was a substitute teacher in Minneapolis, I'd be like, okay, this is cool, but you know, I need something a little bit more heady, intellectual, or something like that.
No, I think it's like, I think hopefully they get stimulated other places because they're going to get stimulated by Trevor. That's for sure. all right, we have a guest today, a friend of the show, and he's been on before in the early days, Willie Staley. You know him from twitter.com, maybe his work and writing at the New York Times. He's our skate Twitter correspondent, whether he likes it or not.
Yeah. You want to talk about parallel parking in the city of Brooklyn, you got to go through this guy.
This is the number one guy for that.
He's who you tap in with.
He's who you tap in with. So we're going to get the full Park Slope parking report from him. And you got to stay tuned for that. I know you're biting your nails. Let's give him a call. How Long Gone is brought to you by our dear friends at BetterHelp, Jason.
BetterHelp, you know, the summer travel season is coming up. Luckily, my BetterHelp therapist also fancies themselves a bit of a travel agent. So for maybe the first half of our suite sessions, we were spent off clock going through, you know, hotels, ferries, car rentals, restaurant recommendations. It's as if I have two wives. I have two wives inside of me, and
sure.
Yeah, so it is a fun way to find and connect different therapists. You get one that you really like. You guys are gossiping. You guys are chit-chatting. You guys are talking about your personal interests. Next thing you know, it's time to actually do the work. So it feels good building those mental health relationships with people you actually like. And on BetterHelp, there are so many different therapists to choose from.
I don't like anyone. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapist anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/howlong today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/howlong.
Nice.
How Long Gone is brought to you by Nutrafol. As you know, hair thinning is quite complicated. Like your skin, hair is a reflection of your health. And internal factors can impact the way your hair looks, feels, and most importantly, grows. Nutrafol's whole body approach multi-targets underlying root causes like stress, hormone fluctuations, and nutrient gaps for visibly thicker, stronger hair.
Go ahead, give it a tug. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth suppy, with over 1 million people seeking thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with considerably less shedding. Thank God. Take the first step to visibly thicker, healthier hair for a limited time. Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month's subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code HOWLONG, all one word. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and stylists and professional stylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled N-U-T-R-A-F-O-L. I got Raf on the nut.com promo code HOWLONG. That's Nutrafol.com promo code HOWLONG.
All right, Willie, you're coming to us from the tower. This is an iconic New York background.
Roaches and rats. Some construction
going on. Just classic stuff.
Guys eating tuna fish sandwiches on an iron beam. It's nice.
Yeah, we've got it all happening. You might even see the automatic blinds here. They're kind of, something's moving in the building.
Oh wow!
So you're at the New York Times building right now in your office, in a office, in a co-working space.
In a office, it's kind of, I'm one of the only people on the floor today because it is the Friday before a little break. So I just grabbed the corner office that I think the TV people own.
Okay. Mm. Okay. Is there an eerie vibe in the office being so empty, or do you normally?
Yeah, it feels eerie.
WFH.
I got really used to this in like around 2021. I was here all the time when no one was really back at the office yet. So I like brought a putter, some golf balls, knocked some balls around, made the most of it, you know? And it kind of brought me back to a period in my life that I only sort of remember because I spoke to so few people.
Okay, hold on. So when you bring a six pack of Titleist and your putter to the office, like a bad boy, are you simply putting a cup down on the floor on its side, or do you have?
I want to know how you get that thing past security. I know it's tight down there.
Or a green? Do you have a green? Like what? How serious are you taking it?
Is there a sharper image, vintage sharper image putting green piece would be nice? Sorry, go ahead.
It would be nice. I temporarily had a little green when we worked out of the Time Life building during the densification years. They moved us out of the Times building into Time Life Center up by Rockefeller Center, and we each had our own offices, the editors, which was like, you know, hasn't been the case for a really long time. And so
that's so money.
When I had it, I got myself a little putting green. Definitely took a few strokes off the game. And then when we moved back, we went back to open plan, and I think what we discovered is like the putting green kind of smelled like it was like off gassing the whole time. Like it was just like, it was just pretty unpleasant to have around. And so we got rid of it. So I just put, there's little vents on the floor, like all around. And the center part of the vent is like about the size of a golf hole.
Good enough.
That's a target. So I knocked a few around today, actually, you know,
I'm just imagining the owner of the New York Times listening to this right now, thinking about how his precious overhead and office space during these trying times is being used.
Well, we're back.
Now. That's no offense.
Yeah. No offense. So if AG is listening, you should know that it's all being put to good use. And, you know, maybe I'm on a phone call when I'm knocking the putts around. We don't know.
That's true. That's true. You keep your Beats Pro on while you're doing your little putts, just in case.
I took a lot of phone calls in 2021 that way. That was a lot of my life, was putting around the office on phone calls with writers or whatever.
But that sounds fun.
I would want my editors to be shaving strokes off their game as well. It's kind of good for the brand overall, right? When you're closing those deals over on the Manhattan golf course.
I think so. You don't want an editor who's like a 20 handicap. You know what I mean?
That's bad. I only like to work with people who are good at stuff, whatever that may be. You know what I mean? So like if I was a bad golfer, that's embarrassing. That would hurt my career. You know, if I took up golf,
I think you are a bad golfer.
Though. No, but I'm saying if I promoted myself as a golf lover, and then Willie and I hit the links, and I'm duffing them all over.
You didn't have the stroke.
I'm duffing them all over the place. My stroke game is weak. Mm-hmm. That would be bad for business.
You're in the rough. You're in the wet. You're in the drink.
I would understand and respect it. it's that's not bringing golfer or skateboarder mindset to this. There's a lot of things that have really tough learning curves, and I respect anyone who loves the game.
What is the relationship between skateboarding and golf? Obviously, there's the famous Eric Kostin crossover from our youth. You know,
I think Willie just said it's the learning curve is probably the high. That's probably the key signifier, right?
Well, I've given this a lot of thought because there's Kostin, but there's, like, you know, there's a ton of other cases. Sean Malto, I think, like Javier Sarmiento. There's a ton of that crossover appeal exists. You have Metalwood, those guys out in LA. I think there's some skate.
Oh, I'm familiar with their camo hats that I see on guys I try to avoid. But otherwise, yeah, no.
Javier's mid-range game is something.
So I mean, I do think there are similarities, though. I think that it's you against a kind of constantly changing environment, you and your equipment, your stuff, and there's, I think there's, you get punished for hubris as much as for, you know, wussing out. So I mean you get more tries in skateboarding than in golf. You can hurt yourself in skateboarding in ways you can in golf, but there is sort of like there's you need to, like, find the exact sort of, like, midline between trying too hard and not trying enough and trying to get it. And it's so it's like you can sort of tap into that same part of your brain that's sort of satisfied by finding success right at that midpoint, I guess, and pushing yourself to go a little further. So I do think, I mean, God, I'm being like 10 times more sincere than I thought I would be on this fucking podcast.
This is honestly interesting because I think people think of skateboarding as such, like,
suck the sincerity out of you.
It's so popular, but I still think people think of it as, like, you know, like, not. I don't think most people could ever see a through line with golf. Is what I'm saying.
Totally. I mean, I think it's not. And it, look, not everyone finds their way to it that way. But there are more than you would think. I think more.
Well, do you just like drinking canned beer, or do you really love the sport of golf?
No, I really love playing golf.
Okay.
I might have one beer at the turn. I'm not a guy who goes out to, like, avoid his wife and drink a six-pack.
Well, I don't know about that. Your two hobbies are, it sounds like, standing around a parking lot with a bunch of dudes, or 4 hours on some grass with a bunch of dudes. So it sounds like you are trying to avoid your family.
That's not true.
That's not true.
I do think that
I think as a family man with a career, you need to proactively find time to politic with your bros, right?
That's true.
It's not something that happens organically like it did in our earlier days on the Embarcadero or wherever it was, really. You have to sit down with a piece of paper and schedule it out. I'm going to go hit this curb sesh. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go hit the back nine, whatever it may be.
That's exactly right. I mean, skateboarding slots into a New York City dweller's life much more easily than golf. Golf is, I mean, really, like, a round of golf can take upwards of, it can take like 6 hours in New York
with the commute. Well, I would love to see you.
On the course, like, it's so slow. Those courses are so clogged.
You get stuck behind a couple grannies, and we're sitting around looking at our watches. We're sitting around looking at our funky Cartiers all day.
It's tough.
You know what I love seeing, and one of the great joys of living in Manhattan is the kind of, the guy that's carrying the golf clubs to, like, the train.
Yeah.
You know, and he's got he's got the Titleist hat on. He's got the fucking, the flexible chinos. He's ready to smash some. And it just looks so out of place every time I see
it. He's heading up to Connecticut?
Yeah. It's just like, you got to have a car.
Is that more out of place than the surfboard on the train, though? Which one is more out of place, Chris?
That's a good question. They're kind of in a similar league, I think.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, surfing is cooler, so there's that. No offense, Willie, but you would agree.
That's indisputable.
You would agree. I guess it's just fun to see, especially when the guys do the thing where they add the second strap to the golf bag, so it's a cross chest X to help support their lower back. And I want to call them pussies, because obviously that's not cool.
You're carrying 14 clubs. You're getting off the top of the one train, walking all the way to Van Cortlandt. Then you're walking 18 on top of that. You're going to want to even out, I think, the weight distribution.
Slow down, Eric Adams. I don't know all these words, all right?
First of all, Willie, if you're playing for real, you obviously have a caddy. So I don't know what the big deal is. Or you're at least...
No.
I don't know what you think happens on a municipal golf course, but it's not that.
I'm more of a country club
caddies,
guy.
Caddies are kind of unusual in general, Chris.
That's absolutely not true. That they are not uncommon on in a lot
maybe,
of...
Maybe you Southern sloths
Willie, tell him. They're very common at nice courses, at a free public course.
I mean, at the like highest end, yeah, I mean, people may do that.
I have a lot of friends who are golfing at high-end golf courses, and none of them use a caddy.
Yeah.
Not using one and not having one available to you are two different things.
Oh, well, yeah, you could say that about anything.
Well, caddies changed. From what I can tell, caddies are what really can make the difference because you only know so much. You need someone to confer with about the break, the wind.
Right.
It seems like, I mean, I've seen some golfing documentaries, and it seems like the caddy is the closest person to the golfer.
Guy watches one Netflix doc. He knows everything. Huh? He's a real John Daly, huh?
Willie, historically the caddy is an important part of a champion's game.
I believe that's true. I'm not very conversant in like how pro golf really works. But yeah, sure.
You want to talk about pros? Sure, that's one thing. That's like talking about power lifting and going to Equinox. You know, they're two different things, Chris.
No, I agree. Well, I think that the thing
not everyone can afford a trainer like you.
The thing I learned about golf from watching shows about it is that they're more in shape than I thought they were or they used to be. Like these guys were in the fucking lab like they were a professional football player.
Just like skating.
Yeah, and that is a nice crossover.
Swag.
It's true, Jason.
Speaking of skateboarding, Willie, we were talking about a tweet that you tweeted a couple weeks ago. You know the one.
I know the one.
Buckle up. And I think the question that I was asking for our listeners who don't know, you posted a video of a guy attempting a trick and it showed him fall, fail, bail, biff, slam, whatever you want to call it. How would you call it, by the way? What word would you
use? I mean, it was a mix. So it was Tom Knox, this British skater, and there's a clip of him doing, I think it was one of the enders of his most recent part. And it was an ender. It was a hippie jump over a rail, so like his board stays on the ground, he has his feet in the center of the board and jumps over the thing and lands back on it. Mm-hmm. And then like maybe 5-6 feet later, he ollies like, I don't know, 12-13 stairs or something.
Yeah, he has to quickly land back on a board with the perfect footing to ollie a gnarly set of stairs.
Yeah, and with like a crack at the bottom, and you know, and so he bails off the hippie jump, or he lands it and he sees he only has a second to decide whether he's even going to try and go at the stair set. Not even a second. I mean mm-hmm. less. And so you were I listened to this segment, and Jason, you had the complete wrong attitude about this. Chris was, I feel like I told you as much on Instagram that Chris had it.
Well, I'm more of a friend to the skateboarding community, which is weird because Jason grew up in Huntington Beach, a mecca for our four-wheeled friends.
Well, the question that I was asking has nothing to do with one's relationship to skateboarding. It's more about editing and filmmaking. Mm-hmm. The question that I ask, and only one question.
All right, Spike Jones, calm down.
How many failed attempts do you show before making the trick is too many? Obviously, at a certain point, if the guy falls 380 times, the video takes 8.5 hours for him to do it, you're going to say, okay, that's too many times. But is there a general number? Obviously, every trick is different. Every spot is more dangerous and treacherous than the other one. But at a certain point, you have to agree, you have shown enough failed attempts that I get the point. This is hard to do. And at a certain point, is the attention lost? Are you hurting the fact where you're like, obviously he's going to land this trick and it's going to be cool and his friends are going to take a board and go like this. Woo! Woo! And his friend's going to dap him up and then... You know what's going to happen. You know he's going to land the trick. So why do I just show him fall 10 times instead of 38?
So
that's all I'm saying.
All right. So, I mean, there's two things to address here. I mean, one is that clip you're watching is not in the edit of the video in question. So that was like, it was a special thing. I think Thrasher put on Twitter just as a little video
for the heads. It was a for the heads moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it
for people who want to see how the sausage is made.
Yeah. And the Thrasher is a thing called My War that, I mean, this,
I talked about, yeah. I talked about this. Yeah, I couldn't remember the name of it, right. But I've watched a lot of them. I really like it.
It's incredible. And it's a great little video series. And this guy, they track guys who are trying to trick over the course of years or months or whatever, and they return to the spot, return to the spot, return to the spot. That can be pretty long, but the whole point of it is to show how much goes into something you see in the middle of an edit for like 10 seconds, if
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In the edit, you get maybe like 2 to 3 bales, I guess. I don't know.
Okay.
No more. But this Tom Knox video, I thought it was, and this is what I said on Twitter, I thought it was great because Tom Knox, the way he skates, he's a Londoner. London's not exactly like, if you put like Los Angeles at one end of the spectrum of skateability, like London would be like way far mm-hmm. over mm-hmm. here. Right?
Cobblestones, mud, rain, puddles. Yeah.
The weather's bad and whatever. It's just like, there's just a million reasons why it's tough. Paris isn't even like that. You know, there's European capitals that are great for skateboarding.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, London's terrible for it. And he like finds ways to challenge himself in the environment. So sometimes I think his skating can shade a little bit, almost like kind of weird to watch. This year it did in particular, where you're like, I get that was really hard, but like, I didn't even see what went into it. And it's just so weird, the thing he's doing or the thing he's trying to skate.
Mm-hmm.
That hippie jump to Ollie was like really just, you see it in the video and it is impressive, obviously, but it was like, it really, like the number of different bales and the different ways he had to bail did clarify just how insane it was. So I found it very
eye-opening,
actually.
I mean, just as a person who edits mm-hmm. for a living, you know, these are the philosophical questions that enter my mind when I'm watching something like that. You know what I mean?
It can, yeah, I mean, look, sure. Anything can go on for too long. But knowing that wasn't in the official video, that makes a little more sense.
Oh, you mean me, Jason? I meant you editing the podcast. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't put that. We don't put bales in the articles. You know, that's the whole idea.
yeah.
He's a sick editor, bro. He takes out all my bales. It's so sick. There's no slams in my story this week.
I do take out all of his bales, but it's important to leave one or two in to keep it natural, you know, otherwise people, it'll have too much of a sheen and polish to it.
An Amish quilt kind of, yeah,
exactly, yes.
I wanted to pull up a couple tweets of yours since you are a tweet master.
Oh no.
So this one, because I we're both huge fans of your Twitter, this is not a roasting or a skewering, don't worry.
Okay.
You have thought-provoking tweets, the things that it do to our minds. Okay. It's true that none of your Instagram followers want to sublet your apartment for a week, but if there was a searchable platform that could connect people who have temporarily available housing in New York with people looking to visit New York, I think that would be great. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I was asking you, I wanted to know, I mean, obviously I read that in a sarcastic tone and this tweet could be sarcastic. My mind is wondering, uh-huh. Are you alluding to the obvious app known as Airbnb where you can conduct this business separate from Twitter? Or is this a general plea or desire to create a newer, better, more specific app for this specific type of Greenpoint subletting? You know, can you watch my cat for 4 hours while I go to the dentist or something, you know?
Now you live in Highland Park or whatever, you don't know about this, but in New York,
Glendale.
Sorry.
And I have been to New York.
It's the Armenian Highland Park. So, just so you understand.
Got it. Okay.
It's very nice.
It's so in New York City, there's a couple things have happened with both short-term rentals and the hotel market that have been kind of disastrous. They basically made Airbnb like all but illegal in the city.
Thank God. Ban it. Put him in jail. Lock him up.
Okay.
At the same time, there's an old de Blasio era regulation to like make every single new hotel has to go before the community board. That was sort of like a thing the hotel workers union lobbied for. And
I was wondering how long it was going to take you to bring up a union, but go ahead.
I'm a union man, all right? So, but that is the reality of the situation here. And so,
none of this is making the final cut. None of this is making the final cut.
these two things happened, sort of came online kind of simultaneously. And so now there's no Airbnbs and hotel rooms are like $900 a night. Like it seems like it'll be cool, like temporarily getting like dinner reservations around the holidays or something. Things like that will be easier to in the short term. But I do think in the long term, making it so that it's impossible to do tourism in New York City could wind up having some net negative.
It's bad. Okay, that could be.
So this was a genuine plea for a new novel system because you see a hole in the market for it, and New York has famously been a real us versus them. The locals hate the tourists, and don't go to that part of town. Blah blah blah, tourist trap. But also New Yorkers realize that they need that influx of tourism for money and business, right?
Airbnb never really worked in New York is the reality. It existed, but every time in its heyday when people would do it, it would be like a full scam. Like,
really?
Oh, the shower was in the toilet. The toilet was in the shower, and it was like actually, it's like every picture's on 0.5.
You're actually renting a room in an apartment, not the apartment.
Airbnb only works if you're spending over $1,000 a night in Europe or Palm Springs. That's the only way it works. Everything else, it's a fucking dump.
And we haven't even got to the toilet cams yet, Willie. What do you think about toilet cams?
He's a fan.
Toilet cams? People have cameras in toilets at Airbnbs?
Don't play dumb with me.
Yeah, the kind of Airbnbs that you're staying at, if you're spending $200, that's what happens. They're going to get a pound of flesh somehow.
I was going to say, I've had some good affordable Airbnb experiences still in the last.
It's going to cost.
Well, I think the real beef with
Airbnb. Make sure you get a wax before you check into your next one. Yeah. That's all I'm saying.
I think the real issue with Airbnb is that the owners began to demand a level of cleaning that made not fun. It was basically I could stay in a hotel for the same price and have room service and the bed made up every day. Why the fuck? I'm not taking out the trash. That's your job.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's a cleaning fee on top of it. I mean, that stuff is obviously outrageous. And you should probably I bet if you just hotel the place to clean, it probably ends up being okay.
We only stay at hotels. I might never stay at an Airbnb again. I might never. I just
this is a hotel and restaurant podcast.
But it's it is. But I just hate the idea of having to
meet. And airport.
And airport.
The idea of having to meet a stranger to talk about how to take care of their house. It's nightmare. Nightmare.
You typically don't do that. You punch in a little key card.
Well, now you do, but back in the early settler days, you would have to meet someone.
Back when Lyft had a mustache, you know what I mean, brothers?
Exactly.
And I stayed at an Airbnb cottage in Montana once, and the guy wasn't around. We checked in, and then he pulled up pretty drunk and had was open carrying, and we had to talk to him for quite a while.
Hey there, overwhelmed foodies. Are you drowning in a sea of meal kit options, feeling like you're in a bad dating game where every contestant looks the same? Fear not, because amidst the chaos, there's one shining star worth your culinary affection. Home Chef is not just another fish in the meal kit sea. They're the gourmet catch that you've been dreaming of. Say goodbye to swiping left on lackluster meals and swipe right for the one brand that will make your taste buds swoon.
Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef design recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. Whether you prefer classic meal kits with pre-portioned ingredients and easy instructions, speedy recipes ready in less than 30 minutes, oven-ready kits with pre-chopped ingredients, I like to chop myself, or quick microwave meals that are assembled in minutes, Home Chef has you and your entire family covered for delicious meals, 30 options per week, and serves a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. I'm keto now. Not only is it convenient, but it is also economical. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Mamma mia.
For a limited time, Home Chef is offering our listeners, 18 free meals plus free shipping on your first box and free dessert for life at homechef.com/howlong. That's homechef.com/howlong for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. Homechef.com/howlong. Must be an active subscriber to receive free dessert.
Korea World is a new cookbook written by Dookie Hong and friend of the show, Matt Rodbard. The New York Times best-selling authors of the book Koreatown.
Korea World is a vibrant exploration of the evolution of Korean cuisine, both in Korea and in Koreatowns across the United States, with more than 75 bold, flavor-packed recipes and stunning photography.
The authors take an inside look at the exciting evolution of Korean food through stories of chefs, home cooks, as well as recipes that are shaping modern Korean cuisine.
The book begins in Seoul, where the barbecue scene is pushing into new territory and where the city's third wave coffee culture is exploding.
The tour continues with late night food adventures in Los Angeles, my hometown, and stops into the kitchens of innovative chefs from New York City to Portland, who are putting modern spins on Korean classics.
Recipes include giant short ribs, whole fried smash rockfish, and pineapple kimchi fried rice.
I'm sad I didn't get to name the foods and you did. Korea World is essential reading for anyone curious about the future of food.
Available wherever books are sold. As someone who comes from an open carry state, you have nothing to worry about. That's just a guy exercising his rights.
Uh-huh.
It's nothing. He's not looking to harm anybody. He's just
you don't hurt me, I don't hurt you.
He was like a cougar, nearly killed my son or something. He had all the shit to say, and it was interesting.
So he had to kill coyotes on his land.
Whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, cougars.
Do you have, okay, so do you have, I guess there's that couch surfing app, which is sort of a little grassrootsy still. And it removes some of those cleaning fees and things like that. But have you put any thought into what this service or app might be?
No,
we have
no.
A lot of
like I said,
angel investors listening right now. I'm not asking you to pitch right now.
Oh, okay. Oh, God, I'm missing an opportunity. Fuck.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
No, I don't. Like I said, I was doing a ironic bit about Airbnb and this discourse.
And now you're fucked. Now you're fucked. Now the pressure's on. Come, I need a deck on my desk Monday, and then we're gonna have a few pre-seed meetings with some of my guys.
I just don't want to lose steam on this thing right now, Willie.
Well, the other thing that exists in New York is Listings Project, which is
that's right.
People use that, but that's like.
But there will be like four apartments a week, and then they.
No, it's big now. That's the thing. It's like a lot now? More. Yeah, but it's still like. My three-bedroom open concept in Red Hook, you know, it's like no one wants to live there. You know, no one wants to live there. Even though it has a pottery wheel, I'm still good.
Red Hook's all right, dude. I guess you don't really cross the bridge much.
Red Hook is not all right. It's the middle of fucking nowhere. It's not. It's like it's Gowanus. It's like I don't need to ever go to those places, and you know that. You don't need to go there either.
You don't need to go there.
And unless you host a scripted podcast, there's no reason to spend any time in those cities, right?
Why do you go to Red Hook for the burger at the Red Hook Tavern? Be honest.
That is one reason I've been to Red Hook. I have a close friend lives in Red Hook. Sonny's Bar, which I actually really only like in theory and not in practice.
Okay.
But there's Sonny's. Mm-hmm.
I've heard of this, but how good is this burger at Red Hook Tavern? Because I have heard lore.
It's quite good. It's like it's a very if you're going to spend $30 on a burger, you might as well do it.
What kind of burger are we talking about? Classic smash.
$30. Does it take the trash out when it's done? What do they give you for 30?
This sounds like an Airbnb cleaning fee, Willie.
I think it's like 28 or 29 bucks, but it's like a
and you gotta tip them.
It's a thick burger.
It's
thick.
Yeah,
yeah. It's got like just a bunch of raw onion on it, maybe under it.
Mm-hmm.
Some kind of like house made cheese situation. Mm-hmm. It's very simple.
Okay, so the patty speaks for itself. This Red Hook burger, I'd like to give it a try.
It's good. It's good. Go there with some friends. You have two martinis. You have a cheeseburger. You're leaving happy. You go to Sonny's Bar and you say, I think I like this place. You don't actually have a good time. That's mm-hmm. a good night out in Red
Hook. I like, okay, so the night in Red Hook sounds great, except for the hour to and from to get there. That's the only issue I have is the commute. I could be in Connecticut.
That's a new problem. I guess, yeah. I you know, it's not that long. You pull up the app, car, 12 minutes maybe.
Oh, I thought so you're not driving the VW over there and getting kind of parking because you're having a couple with the boys.
This is not, yeah, I'm having a couple drinks and out for dinner. I'm the VW stays at home. And that's, you know, precautions and other legal concerns aside, the parking would just be that'd be a fucking nightmare.
Sure. It's more of a parking issue. It's not drunk driving you have no problem with. And I understand. I don't either.
If we were to set those aside, which I wouldn't, then the parking would would preclude the possibility.
Yeah, so. I mean, getting okay. a DUI in New York, that just feels...
You have to try. I do think you would have to
Yeah,
try.
That actually is funny. You have to plow into six parked
getting
cars.
Getting a DUI here in California to ride a passage.
Yeah.
I was part of culture. For a parking spot by my house the other day, and just, I was in like across a quadruple yellow line, and like did a 3-point turn in the middle of like a slightly busy street. And as I was turning around, like doing the reverse part of the turn, I saw just a cop car right there. Like I was doing it right in front of them. And it didn't even like, you know, flash me or anything to be like, you know, I can get you in trouble for this. They just waited patiently for me to
look in New York City. Unless you're a poor child trying to jump a turnstile, the cops aren't doing much. They don't give a shit. They don't really give a shit.
It's hard enough.
Yeah. They only want to police those who don't need to be policed is the issue.
They're experiencing millennial burnout, I think, at
1PP.
In a big way.
I brought that up because I read that they spent $180 million on like policing the subway this year or something. And it was like up by like, it was like a percentage that I can't name the amount it went up this year. Mm-hmm. And it just seemed really egregious.
Yeah. I mean, you see them around the things. They like to look at their phones a little bit, kind of like we all do on the subway when we're standing around the platform. But
it's a little different. It's a little different when you got a gun on you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like you can't look at your phone when you're like waiting tables. You know, like
yeah,
like yeah. If you're waiting tables, your manager will swing by and give you the old "if you can lean, you can clean" kind of talk. But you have a gun,
yeah,
and the power to use it and to put people in jail, you can kind of kick it on the phone.
You can ruin my life while you're on Tinder. It's crazy. Yeah. That's absolutely crazy. You could put me in jail.
I've always wondered about the possibility of cop Twitter, which would be like if there's their own.
Ooh.
They have their own world.
What if cops? Yeah, they probably have a great NYPD Slack channel that's super active. I'm sure.
Yeah, it's called Truth Social. It's very well. Speaking of parking, mm-hmm. the parking spot. Did you drive your car to the office right now?
No, I'm in the middle of Midtown Manhattan. I took the subway.
Okay, so the parking's your car is parked in front of your house right now.
I found a spot. I repatriated it to the block last night. I found a spot on the block.
Okay.
That's big.
And how would you rate this parking spot on a scale of 1 to 10 compared to where you normally park on a normal basis?
This is like a 9 and only not a 10 because it's right where my car was last, or first, I should say, vandalized by a lunatic person. So there's some bad memories associated with this parking spot.
Okay.
Okay. So it's parking PTSD, but you're able to power through because it's such a prime locale.
That's exactly right. It's right on the corner.
You were gaslit by this person who vandalized your car, yet you still keep coming back for more trauma. I just think that's interesting.
I have no choice, you know?
what kind of vandalization were you doing? They put a little shit under your door handles? Like graffiti?
No, it was like, it looked like they took a screwdriver, kind of the driver's side panel, like going at the lock, maybe, but not in any sort of fashion.
Your car was stabbed with a screwdriver,
and then maybe like whipped it with a bike chain or something on top. Like there's some damage to the top panel and the windshield. But
okay, they beat the Jetta like it owes him money. Is what you're saying?
The Jetta talked exactly, back and got exactly. Got is what it sounds like to me. The Jetta was mouthing off.
Okay, so you're parked in a triggering parking spot. Despite all of that, it's still a 9 out of 10.
Yeah.
How long will you leave the car parked there because it is such a good spot?
Well, that's another great question.
They had a whole Seinfeld episode about this.
So it's a Tuesday spot for alternate side. So that means I missed the holiday alternate side, right? There are Monday spots across the street. Mm-hmm. That's another reason it's not a 10 out of 10. It would be a 10 out of 10 if I had a Monday across the street, but I have a Tuesday.
That's like your parlay hitting.
I have one of the hardest blocks to park on possibly in America because you can't leave it. The ASP move is that you leave it like just double parked and you can come back to it after they clean the street. But for my block, a bus route goes down it for one block. So you can't double park. So you've got to go find another spot. And to circle the block, there's 5 lights. I won't explain why, because it will narrow down where I live. But there's 5 lights to circle the block to get back. So if I see a spot open up, it's like fucking, it could be like 10 minutes to get back around.
So you have to put a lot of thought into this.
Yeah. It's really one of the, my kids kind of here and parking, moving the car is like kind
of
right around.
Can I ask a question? Is this kind of your thing or does your wife participate as well?
My wife, that's another great question. My wife does not participate very much in the car. That would be, but I can't ask. I couldn't possibly ask her to. I think that it would be, it would just be, it's just, there are lines in every relationship, you know? And I think like we just have to understand and respect this.
Okay. So okay. She's like, your things are parking the car, playing golf and skateboarding, and she has her things, and you guys, that you're able to live a life that way.
Mm-hmm. Is there a situation where maybe we could hire a hypnotist to get you to get rid of the car?
What's it going to take?
Is there a way that we can free yourself from the shackles of the Passat wagon?
It's a Jetta. I just want to be clear about
that. Okay.
It's the smaller sedan. Okay.
You could have lied to him. Passat's a little bit more expensive.
This is not a car you look at and you think, wow, that guy is impressive and must have a nice life. Mm-hmm. You look at it and say,
yeah,
that's been vandalized a few times.
It's not screaming corner office. This guy definitely does not putt.
Yeah.
At work.
So I mean, I the thing is, I need the car.
But do you need it? Is this a dad excuse?
Do you need it for work? Do you have to deliver the paper yourself, or do you just edit it?
So I use it to, for example, go to the beach with my family in the warm months to go mm-hmm. on upstate vacations with my family, to visit family that live in the Northeast, which we have some of. I use it to go to the golf course, but also to the grocery store almost every week, and I take my kid there. So
okay, look, you're making a good case, but I also feel like this car, without this car, you wouldn't recognize yourself, and mm-hmm. I think that's the real issue.
friends of mine have made similar arguments. So you guys are getting close to something here, which is that at least that I should have a different car. I think that they believe the Jetta, I am chained to the Jetta in an unhealthy way, and that I love it despite the fact that there are obvious problems.
They think changing the make and model will fix these problems. I don't see the correlation there.
I don't either.
You guys don't know enough about the car and sort of the car problems that I've had.
How long have you had this car? I'm assuming it's paid off because it's a jalopy.
it's
okay. Okay. So
I got in 2017. I got off this lot in Greenpoint. Cash, yeah. Out the door. Oh,
damn. Okay, big baller.
Well, it was not very expensive. It had quite a few miles on it. Mm-hmm. And you know, and I've been learning a lot about.
Doesn't drive great.
Yeah.
Zen and the art of Jetta maintenance.
One is that kind of thing I learned about my car like 5 years into having it was that my wife is like digging around the center like armrest thing, trying to figure out like the Bluetooth, which I'd never really managed to work out. And like, you know, it has like a center, it has like a JVX thing in the middle that's like custom, like that like lights up and does all sorts of stupid shit. Anyway, okay. She pulled back the rubber mat at the bottom of this thing and discovered that the previous owner had carved like a stash spot in the center armrest.
Oh.
I don't know what was happening with this car before, but
nefarious activity.
The Jetta's hot. It's had some. They kept some bricks in the center. Or is it a small, is it just a little weed, you think?
Maybe it could have been like, yeah, pills maybe, I don't know, or something.
You know, mm-hmm. I had a friend, I had a drug dealer friend who he got into customizing cars for actual like drug runs, like uh-huh. fully chop shop. And it was one of the most impressive things that I have ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Like you pull up in the Nissan Sentra and it's got 10 bricks in it and they ain't going to find it.
The dogs don't know it. The Federales don't know it. I watch a lot of To Catch a Smuggler.
It's a very high paying. Obviously it's a high paying job.
Yeah.
It's a specialty.
Mm-hmm. This was like, he took a bread knife thing. And kind of saw it.
But, that's what I was. Okay, yeah. That's what I mean, thinking.
So for our Fed listeners, what, you know, where are you putting these bricks? Is it in the, what, the door panels? Or
I'm not telling you.
Yeah, I'm not telling you. You look like a Fed. I mean, that's the reality. You could be a cop. I'm usually the cop on the podcast, but today you take the
next time you're at a hotel, Throw it on Nat Geo and you'll see all the hiding spots, oh, brother.
Yeah. Yeah. Blue Lives Matter Willie over here is trying to tell me.
Okay. So I also wanted to talk about something you tweeted about. Somebody was talking about how they're unable to watch. Like, what is it called when I'm unable to watch a movie or a TV show without the subtitles? And this is a
kind of mean one.
Well, I'm not going to say what you said. It's despicable, but it's something that has been in sort of the discourse for the last year or so. Maybe since COVID is when people started realizing that I need to watch Friends with the subtitles on, because I'm also on TikTok and Zillow and Uber Eats at the same time. And it's just like, oh, it's easier for me to watch. And then some time from COVID to now, it's I think it's transitioned from it's easier for me to watch to it is it's necessary. Like, it's I can't watch a movie or a TV show without the subtitles. So we've shifted from low-key liking them to outright needing them. Have you noticed the same thing as well? Is there any end in sight? Is it going to get worse?
When I turn on the TV and someone's talking on it, my brain still processes it like I'm talking to you here.
Okay.
No closed captioning. So I don't. This is one of these things where 25 and unders just mystify me, and I have no fucking idea what I said for the record of this tweet. Where this person said that they can't actually understand speech without subtitles anymore. I said it's called aphasia, and that you may be having a stroke. That just so we just what the joke was. So because Jason made it sound so cruel. But I don't understand this. Because subtitles would seem to require more attention.
Agree. I don't use subtitles. In fact, I try to avoid anything with subtitles.
If I can.
Because you're a patriot, but that's a different conversation.
That's partly American pride, but partly because I don't read good, you know, sometimes.
I want to distance myself from Chris's reasons for not watching.
Of course. That goes without saying, but it should be said. I think that it can often hurt, especially if you're watching comedy or something. The delivery or the punchline on a joke will be displayed in text before the person has a chance to say the joke with the perfect nuance and timing that they've been crafting for years. So a lot of times I'll be watching TV and I'll have the top part visible in my mind and I'll mentally block out the letters. But sometimes, you know, if you've had a hard day, it is kind of nice to have it's like watching a TV show with training wheels, as if watching a TV show was hard before.
It feels absolutely insane to me. This is one of the dumbest. This is like we should.
I'm not
ban
proud of it.
Closed captioning from televisions. Let's take it off. Who needs it?
Shout out. I'll say deaf people for one.
Yeah.
Oh well, the deaf community is obviously. I'm not speaking about the deaf community. I'm speaking about the TikTok community. Obviously, I'm a friend to the deaf.
I do always wonder, like, if you're watching a foreign movie or something with subtitles, I feel like you are not like appreciating the subtleties of the performance.
Definitely not.
I do worry I'm missing something. So it really surprises me that someone who is able-bodied, native tongue, all this stuff, putting on fucking to understand like exactly what Ross and Rachel are saying to one another. That seems. I don't know. It makes me worry.
But you're right. When I watch, obviously, my French, you know, art films, you know, and there's a lot of nudity, which is cool. There's smoking and stuff. I am missing, I think, some of the nuance of the performances because I'm having to read the drivel that they're saying to each other when really those films are about the beauty
and
the cinematography. And that you make a great point.
Yeah, to me, it's kind of like when people play video games and with the cheat code on the entire time. It's like I only want to play if I can never lose.
Are there cheat codes?
Yeah. Do a little keystroke, A, B, up, down, selects, and then you have a limited lives or you have every crazy weapon.
Jason, I really, I, Thank you for sharing this, but I really would like to know how you know this, because
yeah, is that true? I have no idea.
I can't substantiate these claims, and neither can Willie. And I also don't know you to be a gamer, so I'm wondering what your source is.
I pay attention to all forms of media, including gaming, and I have played video games in my life. I don't currently do it, but I'm familiar with the way the system works, and I know that even when I was like a little kid playing Nintendo games, they had cheat codes, you know, A, B, up, down, select, start.
Yeah, sure. No, of course. I mean,
that shit.
The only thing I follow in video games is when they make people players on NBA. Yeah,
Peter Griffin.
Yeah.
I was going to say the one thing I do know about happening in video games currently is you can play as Peter Griffin in Fortnite.
See? And that's unnatural.
But you can play as Drewski on NBA 2K. He's my Peter Griffin.
I've never totally figured out. He just makes funny videos. That's
Drewski's the only person that makes me laugh more than Jason. Drewski videos kill me. I mean, Stitch is doubled over, and it's the dumbest shit. There's just so many classics, but also it's because it's an Atlanta based operation.
Okay.
So I think maybe I do feel a kinship to him.
Home cooking.
But we saw him at the GQ Man of the Year party, and I was like starstruck. I was like, I couldn't say what's up to him.
You didn't say. Let's link and build. Let's get you on the pod.
I want him on the pod so bad. He probably
couldn't. Chris was shooketh.
I was shook. He was the biggest celebrity there for me.
He practically strong-armed Jacob Elordi and Sydney Sweeney out of the way and to make room for Drewski to enter his peripheral.
But Drewski was kind of talking to our crew that we came with. You know, he's friendly with Lil Dicky, you know, and Benny Blanca or whatever. They all know each other.
That's who you guys came to the GQ Man of the Year party with?
He was chopping it up with Lil Dicky. Yeah. We were.
Okay, I'm just.
If you're wondering, it was a movie.
we were in a sprinter with several celebrities.
Oh yeah.
Several Hulu level creators.
Yeah.
Wow, dude. All right. So next time you're there, like, see what they think of like a sort of 30-minute dramedy about the life of a mid-career magazine editor that's sort of semi-autobiographical, not really, but like not, you know. And
it's like Mad Men, but like for now.
Yeah, that's a great way of
how far are you along with the script, this concept? Because I do think that media needs a little bump, and I think this could be good. This is putting lipstick on a pig, if you will.
Well, yeah, and yeah, everything that I've written that involves Willie on Hulu is on Twitter for public consumption. You know, I don't want to hide the ball. Any execs who are out there.
It's so cool that you've been so transparent about that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, especially after the strike, this is like powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think the market is yearning for kind of a newspaper procedural in 2023.
Uh-huh.
And you know, that kind of explosive.
Oh yeah, a newspaper magazine.
Yeah, yeah. I see it more like the Justin Timberlake movie where he works at GQ and has sex with Mila Kunis, you know, and it's like they go to Cafe Habana and stuff in New York.
Gone are those days, though.
He's the in-demand hot art director, you know, is his vibe, and he falls in love with his recruiter. I think you could take some cues, because we could take you, if you were going to hot spots, I think it would really help. So you could hit Carbone and stuff like that, okay. and like have an expense account, which is obviously fictional. And that, I think that kind of endear the story to more viewers.
Mila's not going to go to Red Hook.
A little sexier.
Okay. I got to sit down and talk to you guys about what the hot spots in New York City are. I'll get a list and we'll work them into the scripts. Maybe you guys could have a cameo, you know?
We're in the markets for cameos right now. I would love to go to a restaurant that I've read about on Dumois with you on the show, and kind of you get spotted with podcasters out. That's fun.
I was kind of thinking like I go in with my date to Carbone or whatever, and you guys are like fighting with the hostess, showing them something on your phone.
That's good too.
It waved right through.
Yeah, that, you know, okay, you go right through to your table,
and I'm like, no,
I get
no.
Waved right through.
I used to be verified on Twitter, but I don't want to pay for it, so like I have a screenshot. Another thing that you tweeted, and speaking of the NYC as well as comedy, you were talking about the SNL, the Weekend Update last week, where every year the two hosts will read each other's jokes that they wrote for each other. And they're often, you know, racially charged, and it meant to be embarrassing for the person to read that joke. And you said that it's interesting that SNL tells viewers that they're doing something intentionally outrageous and gives them permission to laugh at it. they seem to really enjoy it. Many shows used to operate with these assumptions built in. And I guess I would just like to hear more about that, because I agree with you, but are you yearning for that time when we were able to just assume the obvious? Or are you upset that we now have to lay out the obvious to protect ourselves? What do you? I'd like to hear more.
I'm so glad you brought this one up. I think, I mean, it's kind of all in there. I think it's interesting that deal where Justin Che swap jokes is like,
but it was that little, shit was funny.
It was funny.
That was funny,
which is rare. I mean, I really think,
yeah. That's because Bo and Yang's the star now. So that's why. Yeah, but luckily we still have Weekend Update.
But this recurring segment on Weekend Update has been happening for a few years now, yeah. And it's yeah. always a funny thing to look forward right. to. It's always funny.
It's always funny. And I think, I mean, it's designed in a really clever way to give the audience permission to laugh at something they wouldn't normally mm. laugh at, I think. It is specific. Like, there are often specific racial dynamics with the swap, or like the joke that Che puts in Joe's mouth, supposedly, about drinking before watching his wife's yeah. movies. So like,
I like that you added supposedly.
Well, we don't know how they actually.
I mean, I can't believe Jost is. I mean, the fact that Jost is married to her is still baffling. Much less does he watch her movies drunk.
That's. I mean, Jost is. I reviewed Jost's memoir for Slate some years back. If you wanted the whole download on my complex journey with Colin Jost.
Are you guys friends now?
No, I didn't hear from him.
He didn't get back to you.
Okay. I'm 1700 deep on the ferry. I don't think I'm going to get that back.
Yeah, damn your NFT membership to the ferry or whatever. That's not that's never happened.
What is his book called? Is it like a humorous memoir?
It's called A Very Punchable Face.
Oh yes, I remember this. I remember this.
But going back to the tweet, I mean, yeah, like they put up these. They say you can laugh at this because of these special circumstances, and people do laugh at it. But of course, watching a comedy show, a late night variety comedy show, was already sort of a special circumstance that had maybe a sort of implied contract between audience and performer mm-hmm. that like they're just sort of recreating a mm-hmm. sort of like
for sure.
meta layer within the variety show to like allow this to live again. I just thought, I don't know, it's like it's a little naughty. Yes, I don't think you wouldn't want to hear this kind of joking all the time, obviously. Well, I mean, like
it's like eating foie gras every night. At a certain point, it's too much.
But it's the only funny thing happening, I do want to hear more of it. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I know what you're saying. I agree with you, but I'm saying if it's sandwiched between, you know, garbage, then we might need more of it.
I guess my thought on it is I like that we're able to have this level of, you know, ball busting, you know, comedy that's on the fringe and it's a little any way that we're still able to do that and make fun of each other and laugh and love each other. And it can be a little racial. It can be insensitive to many other things, but we're all friends and we're all joking and it's all good. If it means we have to have a little stamp beforehand saying like, hey, this is just a joke and this is what happened, for that to happen, I think that's good. It's a bummer that it's not implied and then we do have to explain it, I guess, but it's better than not being able to do it, I suppose. And I think, do you think as time continues to go on and we become more aware of hurting each other's feelings with offensive jokes, it's going to get harder and harder to do this? Is this a segment that won't last? Or do you think, what do you think will happen in the future?
I don't know. I mean, things feel pretty fragmented now. I mean, I feel like streaming is like, if you just look at like the comedians Netflix is putting out, there's not like any hard and fast rule. I don't think that it's like, I don't think that it's like everything's trending like too woke or something. Like I wouldn't say that that's what's happening.
I'll speak for yourself.
I think that it's like Netflix put out specials by like, for example, like Shane Gillis, the guy who was canceled from SNL, who was fired from SNL mm-hmm. for comments on his podcast, and Stavros Halbias, a guy from a podcast that's like pretty out there. And so
I like that you won't say the name of the podcast because it wouldn't be printed in the paper.
I've never heard of it. I'm just
yeah,
I'm,
sure, you've never heard of it involved, yeah, so. Yeah, yeah, it's yeah. kind of out of your zone.
Yeah, so
I agree. I think that I think that honestly, the protest would come from inside the house before it would come from anyone like at the network. Like, I feel like other cast members would be like, "That's actually offensive." Before it would be like an outside person
potentially
saying that.
But I think it's for stand up. It's a little different. For some reason, stand up shows still get to operate in their own little special world. But do you think Netflix would have like a TV show, TV series, or a film that had that level of potentially offensive stuff?
I don't know. No, I think they definitely would. I feel like tons of people, like, there was a moment when like all this stuff was being renegotiated, and I think a lot of smart people have been thinking how to, like, well, how do I accept this and move past it, you know, and how do I make art in this new context, mm-hmm. and not be totally beholden to discourses I may want to question or whatever. I mean, I think like think about like the White Lotus season 2 or something, which like takes in everything about sort of like social justice-y discourse and has a ton of fun with it and like makes fun of different characters different ways and doesn't feel at all beholden to these discourses or whatever, and like isn't offensive, but certainly doesn't seem like afraid of causing offense. I don't think like that's sort of narrative that like we can't joke anymore is totally oversold. And I didn't mean for my tweet to like sound like I was saying that. I do think that like specifically with SNL, which seems like it has a hard time finding what like the mass audience thinks is funny, it's like, well, the like the naughty thing actually seems to play a little bit, and this is and everyone understands what's going on there, and they trust you guys. And I just think that there's it was like it's unusual to see something that you would normally think would be offensive taken out of that anyway I made my point, but I do think that like all of which is to say, I think people are like, comedy is always about navigating social mores, and there's like sort of novel ones bubbling up, and people, it might take time to figure out how to navigate them, but everyone, people are, and all this stuff feels, I feel like there's a lot of good stuff out there these days. So I'm not, anyway, I don't think that we're like trending in a direction where it's all Hannah Gadsby, okay. You know?
Sure. Wow. One of the most cursed of all time.
I guess one last question. You are a tried and true Twitter user. Are you, you know, in the last year, now that Twitter has taken a shit and turned to X and seems to be going down the drain more and more, are you staying strong?
Jason, you sound like the woke mob now, but go ahead.
Well, I love Twitter and I use it every day, just like Chris does. Chris and I are both holding. We're going to go down with the ship if it does go down. Mm-hmm. How have you thought about your relationship to this platform in the last year?
Well, I wrote an article for the New York Times Magazine back in the winter, spring. You can check that out, called "What Was Twitter Anyway?"
About okay.
8,000 words on this. And
8,000?
We don't got that kind of time. Can you summarize, please?
It's a little bit, I mean, but a lot's happened. A lot's happened since then. I just wanted to plug your audience.
I will listen to that article.
it's about an hour, I think. So anyway, I do think it's gotten worse in some ways. I mean, it continues to kind of empty out. The ad situation is like kind of egregiously bad in a pretty obvious way. Mm-hmm. Not only does that indicate problems going forward for like cash flow for the X business, but also it just makes it kind of unpleasant when you see the same weird bra ad like every three tweets when something misfires. And so that's unfortunate. I tweet less than I was. Like in when I wrote the piece, I kind of tracked my output to like make a certain point about how there's a very small tranche of users who really generate what seems like reality on the platform. And so I was really paying attention to which I was tweeting per day. And I looked back at it recently, it's substantially higher than like what I'm up to these days. Because it seems like there's less happening. Plus there's all the egregious kind of just like accounts like fucked up videos. And they're like, want to see a guy get shot in the head when he tries to rob a liquor store. And you're like, I mean, not really, but you might end up watching it.
Your for you page is twisted. Wow.
No, that's everyone's. That's everyone's.
I don't see that. I've never seen a video like that. I'm not exaggerating.
Oh, really?
Never seen it.
Interesting.
Never seen. That's what I'm saying. I have a great experience every day. I hit the for you. I hit the following. It's all fun and games. and everybody's just complaining about nothing. It's all good, except for the ad thing. I mean, I'm saying the lack of ad revenue is going to be a problem. That's the only thing I foresee really taking it down.
Elon has a high risk tolerance. So, I mean, it's very possible. For work, I was actually reading the biography that came out, and there's this like anecdote about him playing poker with all these VC guys, and he like really didn't know how to play, and he just kept buying in again. He was just losing money. He kept buying in until he like kind of won it back. So he was more willing than anyone to just play money until it came back in some way. And his career is kind of full of these long shot bets. So I'm not to say like trust the plan with Elon, because I do think X and what he's doing is pretty far out of his sort of
zone.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
his plan is not to make Twitter dope and awesome and amazing. It's to turn it into like a payment system, banking platform, global world order thing, right? So I don't want his plan to win.
Yeah, it's like what the two businesses merged and made PayPal in the 90s, and that's how he got rich. Yeah. But that was called X.com, whatever. So he wants to like go back to this thing, which is like social network payments.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you trust Elon and that with his, you know, your credit card and everything.
I'll give Elon my credit card right now. Thanks for joining us, Willie. It's been a pleasure.
All right. See you guys. Thank you.
No. It was good to see you. It was good to see you. And thank you for doing this. This feels like a special holiday episode, you know, for the heads.
That means a lot to me. It's really great to be back on the pod.
No. You know? Look, you're a pro, and you're welcome anytime.
All right. Hold me to that.